NBA Sports Basketball Podcast. This is an emergency podcast after we have an actual playoff series. We have an actually interesting result. We have an actually interesting conference finals after the Celtics, out of nowhere, pull off the upset in Game 3, 111-108. Absolutely crazy. Without Isaiah Thomas, which we are going to talk a lot about, the Boston Celtics got great performances from Marcus Smart, who hit 7 of 10 from three-point range. Avery Bradley was phenomenal with 20 points. Al Horford finally made a couple of shots late, even though he was bad overall in the night. They got good performances from even Kelly Olynyk gave them 15, and Jonas Derebko in 12 minutes was a plus 22 as the Celtics stormed back. LeBron James, 11 points on 4 of 13 shooting, 6 turnovers. What is your reaction, James Herbert, who you can find at Outside the NBA on Twitter?
I mean, I'm stunned. I didn't see this coming. I was at the two games in Boston, and the last thing that I thought was going to happen was something like this. Like, I thought the Celtics looked defeated. I thought the Cavs had, like, gotten rid of that part of themselves that would take their foot off the gas. Like, the way they played in Game 2 when they were already up by 40-plus and were still playing hard was so impressive to me. And they just went back to this kind of thing where, like, they built a lead, and then they just kind of let the Celtics back in, and then once it got close, it was a toss-up, and Avery Bradley made the biggest shot of the night. It was a really, really impressive game for Boston, especially considering how well the Cavs started, because they were making absolutely everything at the beginning of the game. But, yeah, credit Marcus Smart, credit Avery Bradley for making the biggest shot of the night. It was insane. It was the most exciting game that we've had in a while, and I think it was a little fluky, but that's fine. Like, the Celtics will take it any way they can get it. They have just extended this series. The gentleman sweep is also back in play, but who knows? Maybe they tie it up, and then all of a sudden we're talking about this totally differently.
It took me until the start of the game to start really thinking about it. I was just like, well, Thomas is out. They're overmatched. The Cavs are locked in. We're done. And then right before the game, I tweeted, so I'm going to be really interested to see how this first quarter goes. Putting Smart in, it's a more defensive lineup. I'm curious, at least. And I started just really thinking about the fact that, okay, so versus the Raptors, we talked about this, you're not going to win a shootout with them. You're not going to win a shootout with them. That's not going to happen. You have to have some semblance of defense. And what happened was this lineup, without Isaiah Thomas, is really good defensively. You've got Marcus Smart, who can guard five positions. You've got Avery Bradley, who can guard three. You've got Jay Crowder, who can guard three. You've got Al Horford, who can guard three. You've got guys that can switch all over the place. And in the first half, it didn't seem like it mattered because the Cavs were just hitting everything. Like, they just hit absolutely
66 points in the first half.
Yeah, and it was ridiculous. And the thing was, but here's the difference. In the first two games, for the Celtics offensively, when they got open looks, I was like, I don't think they want that shot. I think the Cavs want them to take that shot. Like, they're not worried about that shot. It wasn't ever in rhythm. It was like, I'm open, I'll shoot. And then in this game, the Celtics were very much in rhythm. And in the first two games in Boston, the Cavs were finding great looks and doing, and they dictated whatever they wanted. But in this one, they were being forced into certain looks and just making them. You have to have some sort of ability to put them not at ease. And that's what happened. And that, to me, and I just wrote about this, that's Isaiah Thomas being out. Because the Cavaliers weren't able to just be like, let's go find out whoever Isaiah is guarding. Let's put him in a switch. Let's punish him. Let's make him freak out. Let's move the ball and we'll get a good look. And they did that over and over and over and over again. And in the second half, when those Cavalier shots stopped falling, they put in a 93.6 defensive rating the Celtics had. That is phenomenal. That is exactly what you want. And yes, the Cavaliers missed a bunch of stuff. And yes, LeBron James said after the game he did not, quote, have it. And this is going to happen sometimes with LeBron, and it's just kind of how he's made, that there are nights when he simply does not have it. And when he doesn't, your chances of winning go way, way up. And Marcus Smart hit 7 of 10 threes. But I just found this stat.
Yeah.
No, I just found this stat, and this is really interesting. Who has a better three-point percentage in the playoffs from three-point range, Isaiah Thomas or Marcus Smart?
Yeah, Smart is at like 34 in the playoffs or something. He's 30, been fine. But he was
not 36%.
Well, that's after tonight.
No, that's going into tonight. I found that on Basketball Reference.
Really?
Going into tonight, 35.6%.
Okay. I mean, he was 0-for-4 in this series in the first two games. Like, they were willing to give him three-pointers, and that's generally how it's been the whole postseason, is they're, like, teams are just giving him three-pointers as part of the game plan.
They should be giving Isaiah Thomas them, apparently.
No, because they're created in totally different ways. I mean, like, go back
you're
to,
right.
like, the Bulls series.
You're absolutely right. One is created from moving the ball and finding good offense. The other is from a 5'9 point guard dribbling around. What's the difference there? And we saw
one
it
is,
in this game.
One is the opponent begging the player to shoot those threes. One is the opponent doing, like, actively whatever they can to allow that player to get open from three. Like, let's not get this twisted here. Isaiah Thomas is a million times better of a shooter than Marcus Smart. I mean, come on. Like, look at the opponent's game plan in every game that has been played in the playoffs. Marcus Smart was actively harming his team earlier in the playoffs because he was afraid to shoot them. He's very aggressive in big moments. He's particularly aggressive when he's starting, and that was the mindset he absolutely had to have in this game because they needed somebody to create offense, and it ended up, like, being perfect, and he had the game of his life. It was amazing to watch. But let's not use this as an opportunity to make fun of Isaiah and kill him. It's not fair. And, like, the idea that Marcus Smart is somehow a more dangerous shooter and that's what his opponents are worrying about, like, that's ridiculous.
No, but it created better offense. I think the Celtics, legitimately in this matchup, are better without Isaiah Thomas. I think they are better in this matchup without Isaiah Thomas. They are legitimately better. If this was the Raptors, I would feel differently. I think you need Isaiah Thomas versus the Raptors. I don't think you want to move the ball around versus the Raptors. I think you want to beat them one-on-one, and I think you can. I think if the Celtics and the Raptors had played, Isaiah Thomas would be a huge, huge swing factor. I think in this series, he was a liability. And it sucks that he got injured. I feel horrible for him. That sucks. The guy's had a terrible couple of months. Like, it just sucks what he's had to go through. But this Celtics team, like, this Celtics team is a lot better when they are moving the ball. And because this has been interesting, right? So the story of the Celtics this season changed, where it started being like, it's Isaiah Thomas and a bunch of guys. For 2 years prior, when Isaiah Thomas transitioned from being a sixth man into a starter, the story really was the Celtics don't have a superstar. They've got a bunch of guys. Anybody can step up. And they were all kind of dangerous. And yet, for some reason, when Isaiah started dominating the ball and scoring a ton in the regular season, like, it all changed into this dominant thing. But if you're 5'9", and you're facing a front line of J.R. Smith or LeBron James with Tristan Thompson most notably behind them, this is the biggest difference in the series versus the ones that they had. Is he struggled at times in both of those previous series. He struggled versus the Bulls. He struggled versus the Wizards. But neither of those teams had a shot blocker and defensive presence down low like Tristan Thompson, nor did they have the kind of perimeter attention that LeBron James is able to give him. And we saw him get swallowed up in this series. Just swallowed up. And without him, they're moving the ball. It's more open. It's more free. Everybody's getting looks. They found mismatches. They got Al Horford in good situations. He even had a bad night, but I felt like he was getting better looks. They found better looks.
And he's part of the ball movement, as he's an awesome passer. And, like, I would just be careful to, like, draw too, like, much of a dichotomy here between, like, what they do with that Isaiah and what they do with him. And I'd be careful to overreact to one game. Like, part of what makes the Celtics good has always been their ball movement. They pass the ball more than any other team in the playoffs, and that's with Isaiah. You need somebody to create an advantage first. You need somebody to make the defense move. That was his number one job, but he wasn't just, like, pounding the ball and throwing possessions away. It's tougher for him in this series. It's been tougher for him at times against blitzes, which, like, has been what they've done, the Cavs have done in all series. I think oftentimes you see when a star goes out, you saw this, I think, when Kawhi went out at the end of that Rocket series, you see the other team kind of let up, maybe look past them, and you see that team have extra energy and extra spark. And I don't think we need to, like, turn this into a referendum on Isaiah Thomas. He's done so much for this team. We've seen how good he is. I think there's a big difference between saying, yeah, like, defensively, clearly they're more versatile without him. Like, that's obvious. They're bigger, they're longer, they're stronger, they can switch more. I thought they actually switched less in this game. But they have that option, and it's just easier when you have similarly sized players out there. But to say offensively they're just going to be better without him, like, it worked for a game. Marcus Smart went nuts. And the ball movement was very good. And I think oftentimes you see when stars go down, other people step up, and it makes it more of a concerted effort. Like, we have to move the ball to survive. But I don't think Isaiah was ever a selfish player. I don't think he was ever a guy that, like, just ground them out of their system. I think he controlled the ball a lot because he's insanely good in the pick and roll, and he's a guy that you can build an offense around, and that's why they played that way. But I think it's a false dichotomy to say they move the ball when he's not there and they don't when he does, because he's often just the guy that gets it started and then you see the ball popping around. That's been part of their identity the entire time.
Oh, I disagree. Look, he racks up assists, but it's a lot of the one-on-one move, kick out, and then a three, because he does take the shot down in the clock. Everyone's not moving, and you did hit on something interesting here. They weren't going to trap and double because you're not scared of Marcus Smart and you're not scared of Avery Bradley. You're like, all right, we're just going to play it straight up, right? And in doing so, it does, I think, kind of free things up more when there's not that kind of aggressive pressure on you. They're just like, all right, we're gonna make you guys beat us. But the Celtics have a bunch of guys that can beat you versus Isaiah Thomas, who could not beat them. That was just a fact of what happened is Isaiah Thomas could not beat them. And what we're seeing in the series with this game, at least, here's what I would say. They do not win without outlier performances. They needed an outlier performance from LeBron, and they needed an outlier performance from Marcus Smart. Those are the two outlier performances that they got. And those two things contributed to a win. But the reason the game was close was because the entire dynamic of the series shifted when Thomas went down. The entire dynamic shifted when they put Marcus Smart in the lineup and they played a different style of basketball. They were not the same kind of team. They weren't ball dominant. They weren't, I'm going to have a 5'9 point guard, drive it to four guys, and let's see what happens. They weren't trying to rush shots like that. It did change the fundamental elements of the series, and I think those guys deserve a lot of credit. And some of this is what we notice in the Rockets series, where when a star goes down, the other team has a letdown. We've seen it time and time and time again, that when a star goes down, the other team has a letdown. The Warriors actually deserve a lot of credit for, in Game 2 versus the Spurs, coming out and being like, we're not going to get caught off guard, we're not going to have a trap game, we're going to blow the doors off you. But then in Game 3, it was actually relatively close, based off of the fact that they, like, people commented on this. I saw ESPN talking about it. Like, the Warriors kind of sleepwalk through it. And that's, again, the product of if the other team does not have their best guy, there's a letdown moment. But I do think that the way that the Celtics played tonight, I cannot help but look at that game and think, like, man, take up all those elements and let's put Marcus Smart in it. And let's see let's put Markelle Fultz in it in 2 years. And what are you really looking at? And I'm like, that's really exciting.
You're extrapolating way too much. Like, they were down by 21. The Cavs got comfortable and they let them back in. And that's been a bugaboo of the Cavs all year. I was talking to them on Shumpert in the locker room after the game too, in Boston. And I was asking him about, because I wrote an article that looks kind of funny, like, a couple of days later, because I might have just missed the mark based on what they did in this game. But it really seemed like they put that part of themselves that needs adversity to respond and, like, not get bored. Like, they put that behind them, and they weren't, like, the drama kings of the NBA anymore, as their general manager had called them last year. And he was saying, like, a lot of their issue is they'd build these big leads, and then they'd come out in the third quarter, and they'd surrender them. And they would just kind of let a team come back, and then they'd, like, kind of hope, like, they made a run, that was always going to happen, and now we'll see if we can wrestle this game back away. And they, like, have made a conscious effort in the playoffs of being like, no, we're going to win the third quarter. We're going to play really intense in the third quarter, even if we have a huge lead, even if we have a 20-point lead. And it was down to things like Tyronn Lue giving them shorter speeches at halftime to get them back out there so they can do a hard layup line and get their sweat going. And then what do we see the very next game after I write that story? We see them completely collapse and give up a 21-point lead, give up a huge run in the third quarter, and the entire momentum of the game shifted. And Boston, who, like, I mean, credit the Celtics, even when they were getting killed, they were playing super hard in that first half. And once it turned, then they had this confidence and they were already playing really hard and they started to see the results and they took over. But I just think to say it turned when Isaiah went out, to say it turned in the first quarter, like, I just don't think that's accurate. Like, the Cavs were dominating this game and then they let up. Celtics managed to steal it at the end, and there was still 2 minutes left in that game, and it was very much up in the air. Like, would not have surprised anybody if Kyrie had made a big shot or LeBron had made a big shot, and the Cavs had held on, and everybody would just say, great job, great effort by Boston, Smart was amazing, blah, 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 but the better team won. And that's just not what happened. Like, the Celtics made more plays down the stretch, but I really think Cleveland fell apart.
A Hey guys, it's summer. You're going to want to get out. You want to go to concerts. You're going to want to go to games, baseball games. You want to catch the NBA playoffs. And to do that, the best way to do that is with SeatGeek. I'm going to tell you how you can get $20 back on your first purchase just by listening to this podcast. SeatGeek is the smartest way for you to find tickets wherever you are. Their app is incredible. I've got it on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I found to buy tickets for anything I want to go see. I can be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can find the seats that I'm looking for. The best thing is they are going to search multiple ticket sites, okay? They're not just going to look and pull from their own distributors. They're going to find you the best across multiple sites to make sure that you get the most value, and they're going to make sure you get the most bang for your buck, because when you look at these tickets, they're going to give you a grade, and they're going to let you know exactly how good those seats are for what the venue is, what the event is, how much are you paying, or is this actually good value for you so you can be smart with your money. Plus, all of their tickets come with a 100% guarantee so you can shop with confidence. Best of all, like I said, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. To get the $20 rebate, here's all you got to do. Download the SeatGeek app, and go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code. Enter promo code IEYE, as in the CBS logo, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you made your first purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code I today. I agree with you, but here's kind of the thing. The win isn't really meaningful to me. It's how did they play? Like, that was what I was watching. It was like, when I watched the first two games, I was just like, these guys have no chance. I was like, they are just overwhelmed here, and they've got zero shot. But with this new approach, where it was defense-centric, and they were forcing a ton of turnovers, what did they finish with here? They finished with...
I think the Cavs had 15 turnovers.
15 turnovers. They had 15 turnovers. For them to be forcing that kind of action, and to me, again, in that first half, they were doing good things defensively. The rotations were on point. The Cavs were just making an extra pass and then firing. It's the way that they played. They played way better in this game. And maybe that's just because they knew they were up against it, and they had to play harder. But mm-hmm. they were still able to play harder, and they were still able to play better. They were able to play better on both sides of the ball. And part of that, in large part, was because offensively or defensively, they weren't having to. This is something I noticed. I did a post back in December that made a lot of Celtics fans mad. And what it was I was looking at, why is it that the Celtics defense in the fourth quarter is so much worse without Isaiah Thomas is on the floor? And it was across the board with everybody. The results wound up fixing themselves, unlike the Kawhi stuff. It wound up fixing itself over the course of the year because Isaiah just got that much better offensively. Like, he just started scoring even more and more and more and more and more. So the net rating evened out, but the defense was still the same way. And so one of the things I noticed in that game was I went back and watched all the film in December, and I was like, what's the deal? And it wasn't Isaiah. It wasn't ever, like, most of the possessions weren't his guy. But what you would see is Isaiah's guy would get the ball, and they would start helping over and helping over and helping over because they were really worried about that mismatch. And actually, one of the Celtics reporters reached out to me and was like, this is actually a thing, and Isaiah's told them to stop, that he can handle his own assignment. But if you see a 5'9 guy going up against any guy that's a basketball player size in the NBA, you get a little nervous, and you start to help out. But in this game, no one had to help out over. The only play that was really bad was Jay Crowder helping on LeBron, which I actually liked late because LeBron had 6 turnovers in this game. It was worth taking the gamble. I thought it was worth taking the gamble because LeBron was just making bad decisions all over the place and couldn't get his passes off. So what we see again is that without Thomas on the floor, the Celtics have a more confident defensive mindset. They're not as worried about this other thing. They're focused on their guy. And I thought they played good defense. They got bad results in the first half. But in the second half, that really regulated itself. That doesn't mean that that's why they won. They won because LeBron had a bad game and Marcus Smart hit 7 of 10 from 3.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, I don't think anybody would argue that they're a better defensive team with Isaiah. Like, they're not. And that's, like, going into this game, like, any reasonable person would say, like, yeah, like, defensively, they perhaps have a better shot at slowing them down. In the first half, it looked like it just didn't matter because the Cavs' shot making was that good. Their offense was that good. Even without LeBron really making that many plays, like, it didn't matter. But in the second half, it kind of evened out, and the Cavs totally lost their rhythm, totally went cold, and the Celtics won. But as you said, like, they needed other things to happen. And I think it's silly to lose sight of the fact that they're a much, much better offensive team with him, and they got lucky on offense in this game. And that is – I don't even mean lucky like it shouldn't count or like we shouldn't credit those players, because of course we should. They played really hard offensively. They moved the ball. They did what they had to do. And they made some tough shots at the end of the game, and that's great. I just think that's going to be hard to sustain beyond this. And that will probably be a problem next game. I think we actually agree on that part.
I have something I have to share with you. Going into this series, before the massacre that was games 1 and 2, the Celtics' offensive rating with Isaiah Thomas on the floor in the playoffs, 110.7. The Celtics' offensive rating with Isaiah Thomas off the floor in the playoffs, 111.2. They had a better offense with Thomas off the floor than on in the course of the playoffs.
Playing against teams with like no bench, that they were just killing their bench. Like, we have to have context here. Like, the bench units of the Celtics, a deeper team than the teams they were playing, were doing really well. None of this means Isaiah Thomas is bad. Like, none of this means that he's just hurting them. He's a great player. He had an amazing season. We don't need to tear him down after their biggest win of the year. It's just nonsensical to me.
I understand it's nonsensical to you, but I'm not looking to tear him down. This isn't about Isaiah Thomas being bad. I think maybe if you put him somewhere else with the right personnel, if he was like the third best player and you had a dominant wing and a huge rim protector, then you would be in really good shape with Isaiah Thomas. Like, I think he could really help you. I think he could be the starting point guard for a championship team. Like, he scored 53 points.
I mean, this team won 53 games. They were the number one seed in the East. He was their best player. He had a career year. I think it's pretty clear he fits well on this team. Like, they're not going to win a title. No.
Well, but that's
to argue that like he's not a good fit for them and they're not a good fit for him. I would argue he was waiting for this fit his entire career.
That's why
he had such a great year.
Oh, I'm sure that he's waiting for it. It's really great for him. All the stuff you're talking about is great for him.
They won 53 games.
They did. They did try really hard in the regular season. It's true. They also went down 0-2 in the first round. And then wound up going 7 games with the Washington Wizards, who, as you mentioned, had 0 bench, and their starters outscored them by 75 points over the course of those 7 games. Like, there's a lot of evidence here. Like, this is not just a me thing. There's a conversation about this online that is held between reasonable people. I'm not saying Isaiah Thomas is bad. I'm saying that in the course of this game, I don't know how you look at this game and not discover that something drastic was really changed in how the Celtics played, and what that means is really interesting. It doesn't mean even necessarily that Isaiah Thomas has got to be traded. It just means that it's really interesting that the way that they played changed so dramatically with him on versus with him off, and that the numbers are all really fascinating around this context, too.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of things changed without him. I think the Cavs' approach changed. I think the Celtics' approach changed. And Boston ended up winning. It's just, like, the problem I have is when this is turned into, like, well, does this mean they don't need him? Or does this mean he's not that good? And, like, I just, after all that we've seen from him, like, I don't know how the conversation gets there after one game. I don't understand it.
Well, I don't think it is there after one game, because we talked about these mismatches with Thomas defensively throughout the playoffs. Like, you're acting like everything was great with him before, and then now after this one game has totally changed. But that's not the case, right? Like, that's not what we've seen. Like, we have seen that there are these real issues when he's been on the floor. We have seen that the Celtics offense has at times kind of stagnated when he's been on the court. We have seen at times that there's been these kind of issues. And my bigger point is more, let's take Isaiah out of this, because I know that this is a sore spot for you because of how highly you think of his game. Like, I want to look at more of what did the Celtics look
like? It's a sore spot for me. What?
Like,
it's a sore spot for you.
No, it's not at all.
I just think he's an all-star. He's a great player. That is the, like, normal opinion. Don't make it out like I'm the one that's like, oh, I'm so affected by this. No, like, come on.
Well, no, I'm not. I'm obviously, he's like well regarded around the league. Like, he's a player.
He had a 53 point playoff.
He did. Like, it was amazing. It was amazing, right?
He's been like Adam Silver. The first question he got at the lottery was like, "What's been your favorite part of the playoffs?" And his answer was talking about the Isaiah Thomas storyline. And you're telling me, oh, it's not like everything was great heading into this. He wasn't that good. Like, he's been awesome.
Well, I mean, he is shooting 33% from the field, and I think he's shooting 42% from the field, actually, and 33%. Like, he's, as always, with these kind of guys, he shoots a lot. But, again, we've looked at kind of the on-off metrics are telling kind of a different story, right? Like, the on-off metrics do tend to indicate something. And I'm not saying that he's bad. Like, he's awesome. He's an all-star. You're right. He's terrific. I'm more interested in, what does it say that the Celtics look like this without him? What does that say against the Cavaliers, even?
Okay, so what do you think it says? Like, well, let's have that discussion then.
I think it really says that the Celtics are at their best, especially with Al Horford. Because this has kind of been my thought process for most of the year is, it's one thing for Isaiah Thomas to be small on his own. But it's when Isaiah Thomas is small, and then you have Avery Bradley, who's also small, and then you have Al Horford, right, who's an undersized five. And, like, that's a lot of positions to be undersized at. If you notice, a lot of the different kinds, like the Warriors, for example, Curry is actually tall. Like, he's like 6'3", I think. And then Thompson's obviously huge. And then Draymond is undersized, but they don't have, but they're not way undersized all over. The Celtics,
well, they're all long too,
right? And so the Celtics, on the other hand, when you insert Smart, it's no longer like, oh, they're like smallest and smallish. It's like, no, like they've got like a standard size backcourt, and then Horford played. I thought Horford played really well defensively, and they got some breaks in terms of LeBron not attacking. Again, a lot of this just gets back to Isaiah. Or LeBron, rather, like, having an off game. Like, that's what a lot of it, yes, just comes down to.
Yeah.
But I do think it's interesting that if you're able to kind of – and we saw this throughout the year that the lineups that would start the fourth quarter for the Celtics would often be really terrific, and they would be great defensively. And then Thomas would come in, and the offense would shoot up, and the defense would get worse. But Thomas would boost the offense up to where they would basically outlast the opponent, and he would lead the league in scoring and fourth quarter points because that dude is clutch as all get out. Like, Isaiah Thomas is one of the most clutch players in the NBA. Flat out. And I'm not even a big believer in clutch. I think it has to be exceptional for me to kind of buy into it. Isaiah Thomas is clutch to me. Like, that's how good he is. So, mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting that, like, this lineup defensively really, I think, counters what the Cavaliers want to do so much better, because you've got Crowder and Smart, two guys who you can switch off and take possessions on LeBron, and they're not going to wind up being caught in any sort of mismatches. Like, you just have Bradley stay on Irving,
yeah.
And Bradley was so good on Kyrie tonight. Like, he was just – like, Kyrie had a great game, but Bradley made him work for it the entire way through, and it was just really impressive, I thought. And I thought that the way that the Celtics were kind of, you know – developed and how they were put together, and then especially, like, when you think about it, like, what if they had Paul George instead of Jay Crowder? Like, how does that lineup look?
Because, yeah,
you know, Crowder doesn't look great either. So I think even if you're gonna say, like, let's not make this about Isaiah Thomas, okay, let's look at this, like,
no, now we're back in a place I can deal with, like, because I think this is actually interesting. Like, back when they got Isaiah, like, part a big thing was like, how should they use this guy, because it seemed like so much of their identity was, like, they can start games with Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley in the backcourt, pressuring the crap out of you, forcing turnovers, being physical. That was just such a part of their identity, and that helps when you have Crowder, who's of a similar mindset, on the wing. And it took a while. Like, Isaiah had to, like, play so well off the bench that Brad Stevens basically had no choice but to start him. Like, it was obvious that they just had to. But it took a little while, and he was putting up great numbers off the bench before they did that.
Right.
And I think that changed the calculus. It changed how they put this team together. It changed a little bit of who their what their identity was. And I think it only made sense to do that. But I think when you have Marcus Smart and Avery Bradley playing 41 and 42 minutes as they did in this game, then that is a different kind of defensive look. That's a kind of defensive look that most teams in the NBA do not have. And clearly, like, the size issue is a big point. Like, that's been so much of the problem for the Celtics in the series, and it still was a problem in this game. Like, Tristan Thompson was just a monster,
yeah,
on the boards. He just hacked him every time he was on the inside. Mm-hmm. And if they had lost that game, then we would be talking about that. Like, he was 12 for 15 from the line, got 7 offensive rebounds. Kevin Love has been awesome on the glass all series too, and has been really using his size and strength around the rim. But, like, they're at a significant size disadvantage. There was a tweet from Adam Himmelsbach, who writes for the Globe, that after one of Thompson's boards, he just screamed out, "Y'all are too small." Like, the Cavs just think they can bully the Celtics, and it didn't turn out they were able to do that over the course of the game, because the Celtics played so well in the second half and the Cavs fell off. But, like, yeah, that's an issue. And going forward, I mean, we talked about this not very long ago on this podcast about the Fultz question. Like, Fultz fits fine next to Isaiah, but I think he fits better next to Avery Bradley. So
mm-hmm. yep.
they're going to have to figure out what kind of team they want to be and yep. who they want to stick around. And I like, that's just the reality.
Well, do you remember before the series what I suggested? Do you remember what I think it was after game one what I suggested?
You at one point you suggested bringing Isaiah off the bench.
Yeah.
And I disagreed with you.
Yes. And now, because
I just didn't think it would really matter.
And now, you will give me the props I so richly deserve, right? That's what's gonna
happen.
You're never gonna give me my props.
It makes like LeBron plays 45 minutes a game. Like the Cavs don't have these like weak bench units that the Boston's gonna feast on with Isaiah. Like whatever basic problems you have, like defensively, you're going to have against the Cavs. Really, like you can hide them, I guess, a little bit better on a Darren Williams or a Shumpert, but like LeBron is so good at getting whatever switch he wants and orchestrating the thing that I'm not sure it really makes a difference. And I think like while they had him, they were going to use him because like also Cleveland's defense has been really good in this series, and Cleveland at times will sell out their team defense to chase Isaiah. So if you can take advantage of that and then move the ball, theoretically, that's what you do to win, and were never able to properly do that.
Let's take Isaiah specifically out of the equation here, and let's talk about something kind of different, which is that thing you just kind of touched on, which is the ball dominant thing, because that's what I noticed with the Rockets and the Spurs. They were really prepared for Kawhi Leonard to handle the ball and to dribble the ball and to size up and ISO and post up. They were prepared for that. In Game 5 and in Game 6, when that wasn't present and the Spurs were just like, well, I guess we're just going to have to move the ball, it played into what the Spurs wanted because they got way better looks. And Houston wasn't prepared, nor were they adept at being able to do that. We've noticed, I mean, look, the Golden State Warriors collapsed from a 3-1 lead last year, but they built a 3-1 lead. And one of the reasons they built it was that they were able to constantly move the ball against the Cavs. If you're moving the ball, this is why the Spurs do well against the Cavs, right? Like, if you play good basketball in terms of moving the ball constantly, you're going to work well against the Cavs. If you're the Knicks and you grind the ball into oblivion, you're going to wind up in trouble. And I think ball-dominant guys are what are kind of who really struggle. Now, the argument can be made, and this is a fair one, that in Game 2 or in Game 1, Isaiah Thomas was making the passes that he needed to make, and the Celtics just missed their shots. You can make that argument. I don't necessarily find those shots to have been in the rhythm that they wanted or the shots from the personnel that they wanted.
In Game 2, they weren't. I thought in Game 1, they got some pretty good ones.
Right. And so you can make that argument, and maybe that's fair. Because Isaiah, I think the biggest thing that I've saw that's impressed me, I don't really care about his scoring. He shoots a lot, great. But I care about his playmaking and his ability to read those defenses and make those kickouts. And he did a really great job of adjusting and doing that more and more in the playoffs. He had like a 9-assist mm-hmm. game, and he had like a double-digit assist game. But one thing that was kind of notable tonight, too, was that Smart was able to penetrate, and he's immediately looking to kick. Like, he's always looking to make that pass. Like, Marcus Smart's a playmaker. Smart's natural instinct is not to shoot off the dribble. And I think that changes the way that they're able to attack the Cavaliers specifically. And when there's not that ball-dominant figure on the floor, the Cavs are like, all right, we got to hone in on this, and that's our first action. And they're like, I guess we're just guarding offense. It changed the way that the kind of game played out, and I thought that was really fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, and this is one of the subjects that's, like, most near and dear to my heart, is, like, I love ball movement. I love unselfish basketball. Like the Hawks team a couple of years ago, like I'm not the only one listening to this, like people who are listening to this podcast are definitely people who love that team and the way that they played. And I think the trouble is like even the Warriors, like last year in the playoffs, like when things got ugly, when they weren't in rhythm, like their offense kind of died. And that happened a couple of times. And part of that was teams switching against them. There's a lot of factors that went into it, but like they went and got Kevin Durant, and like they haven't altered the way that they played completely. Like they still want shots to come out of the offense. They want ball movement. They want if Steph is just taking his man, a lot of the time he will just pass it off. The ball will swing around. Klay will get a three. Durant will get a three. But when they just need a bucket, they can say, here you go, KD, go one-on-one or go run high pick and roll and step in with jumper. And that makes them a different kind of team. And I think the difficult thing and the key thing here is like you need to sort of be able to do both. Like that's what the Cavs have built their team around, is like they're a high assist team. They're a high three-point shooting team. But when they need a bucket, like they have Kyrie and LeBron to just ISO. Or they have Kevin Love, who can get his own in the post if he's guarded by a smaller guy. And I think it's even the teams that have the guys with the highest usage rates. It's like, I don't really think you look around the NBA and you have teams that are like, yeah, we want to play a bunch of ISO ball. Like, I don't see a lot of it. Like, they want those guys to attract attention, move the ball, get open looks. That was such a big part of what Isaiah did for this team and what he will continue to do with this team if they don't trade him this summer. And I think one of the like most important skills in the NBA still in 2017, despite all that we've learned about ball movement and the way we watched the Spurs beat the Heat in the finals a few years ago, one of the most important skills is still just the ability to get a bucket, to create offense, whether you're creating it for yourself or creating it for a teammate. It's like getting an advantage in the defense, making the defense send help, and then the rest of the play can go the way it's going to go. And that is generally, when you look at like offensive-minded stars, that is what makes them good, that is what makes them special, that is what makes them paid. And I'm not gonna, and I think that's what's really fascinating. When one of these guys goes out, it's like, can that team now make up for that? And sometimes, if it's the Memphis Grizzlies or Toronto Raptors trading Rudy Gay, then yes, they can. Other times, they can't because nobody is actually there to get that bucket when it's hard, or the offense just stalls out without a go-to guy. So, I mean, I'm all about ball movement. I'm all about pace and space. This is kind of my thing. But I don't want to devalue, somebody like Isaiah, who, yeah, has the highest usage rate of his career, and that's why he has these numbers and puts up a ton of points, because I still think that's incredibly valuable.
So what you're saying is that the Cavs would be better with Carmelo Anthony then?
Absolutely not.
I mean, look, when you really think about it, Isaiah Thomas is just kind of the Carmelo Anthony of point guards. He's defensively a liability. There's not much he can do. Shoots a lot. He's mean mugging.
Do you want to talk about why he's an defensive liability and why Carmelo is? Because that's a different conversation.
It is a different conversation. No, and like, I know how it sounds. I know it sounds like I'm just like discounting and forget forever. And like, it's just not. I wrote a column on this if you want to read on CBSSports.com. And what my basic thing was, I was like, look, it's this matchup. That's really what it comes down to, is it's this matchup that I feel this way about. That it's not even, let me put it this way. Because this is an important point, okay? If the Celtics had different personnel, I wouldn't think that they were better without Isaiah Thomas. Does that make sense? Like, it's not Isaiah Thomas makes them bad. It's without Isaiah, the rest of this roster is able to do things that they can't with him on, and that makes them better in this matchup.
I'm not sure I believe that. Defense, yeah.
That's okay. You don't have to believe it, but do you see what I'm saying? Is that a little bit more reasonable in your mind, rather than me just being a hater who's hating on Shorty because Shorty's short?
I think in your heart you're less of a hater on Isaiah than it sounds, but I think you have sounded like a hater a lot. But I don't think that's what you're actually going for, because I think you think it's a matchup thing, and that there are just problems that the Celtics need to solve because of his size. But I think when you bring it up as like, this is the central thing to take from this game, I think that's when it sounds like, well, like, really? But
it's less about that.
Like, I would go back to remember game 5 against the Wizards when they blew them out?
Yeah.
And they were running like crazy. They were passing the ball. Everybody was getting open shots. It was like Brad Stevens' dream. Like, that was one of the best played games that I've seen in the playoffs from any team. The Wizards were also bad.
Yeah, let's be clear. But the Wizards were bad.
But I'm saying, like, the Celtics shared the ball. They moved the ball. They did everything right. Isaiah was part of that. Isaiah was making good decisions. Like, that was a total team effort. And I think when the Celtics have been at their best, like, when it's really been flowing, that's how it is. Like, they are a deep team. Like, it's not...
I agree.
Like, Isaiah had some incredible games this year. He had some games that he just took over.
His December was nuts. His December was absolutely just insane.
And I think it did change the way the team operated. But I do think, like, at their core, like, they're good for the same reason they've been good throughout the Brad Stevens era, is, like, they have a bunch of high IQ guys. They pass the hell out of the ball. They space the floor incredibly well. And they're unselfish and they play hard. And, like, that's who these Celtics are for the past few years. And just because Isaiah has turned into a superstar, that doesn't fundamentally change that. So, like, I think in the grand scheme of things, considering that he is a score-first guard, like, I look at it as like he has done a really good job of fitting into this system. And I get that there's like some sort of negotiation to be done there on a possession by possession basis, because when he's hot, like, the team does tend to just be like, all right, you make a play. But I think fundamentally they still are that team, or at least that's what they strive to be. And that's the team that we saw without Isaiah in this game.
When they come back and win this series, will then you give me my proper credit? Will then you legitimize me?
Sure. they beat the Cavs without Isaiah. Then sure. I'll grant you a formal apology on this podcast.
In related news, the Cavaliers are 15-point favorites in Game 4. and look, the reality, again, is that if LeBron has a decent night, an average night, your standard night, they win.
Also, shout out to Brad Stevens for,
that ATO was insane.
Not just that one. Like, they had a few ATOs, and they just got good looks, like, every time there was any sort of stoppage.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I mean, the fact that he went to Jerebko when he did, when Jerebko's been sitting for so long, he was, like, plus 22 and like, I don't know how many minutes. Like... Not many. It was like coaching matters in the NBA in the playoffs. And like, I'm not ripping Ty Lue at all, but I think like Brad Stevens was an enormous reason why they won that game. And well, it starts with them even believing that they can.
Can I?
And then it's the execution and it's the play calling.
Well, I do want to mention this though. He should have been playing Jerebko the whole way. This Amir Johnson nonsense should have ended in the first round, and he should have gone to Jerebko. Jerebko is good. Jerebko has been good. He was good for them in the playoffs last year. And for some reason, they just, like, every coach has these guys who fans and analysts and everybody are like, he's good. But for some reason, they just slip out with the coach. It happens with everybody. Like, every single coach, even Popovich. There's a particular player right now in the Spurs who everyone kind of thinks is pretty good, but he's just in the doghouse. And Jerebko has just kind of fallen out.
Did that player happen to kind of try to take out Steph Curry in the last game?
I'm not going
to
comment on that, but like Jerebko has been a guy that, and the biggest thing is Jerebko's what you need. He's a stretch forward who's also big, who can rebound. He got 5 boards in 12 minutes tonight. Like, he's a guy who battles, and he's a guy that can hit from range. That's the guy that you need, not Amir Johnson. Like, that's what they should, if you're going to be running the small ball, run Jerebko. Don't, like, you're gonna play, don't bring Gerald Green to the end of this mess. Don't do that. Play Jerebko. Jerebko's a guy who's actually good defensively. Like, that is something that should have happened. And credit to him for going to him finally when he was kind of shorthanded and out of options and was like, all right, I guess we're gonna throw Jerebko out there. But Jerebko's a really good, and he's really good in this matchup. I think that's the biggest thing. It's like, it's not about, this really isn't about Isaiah on, off, or whoever. It's about the playoffs always come down to matchups, and if you're going to beat a superior team, you're going to have to find it with matchups, and the matchups change in Game 3. Now, they're probably going to flip back in Game 4. LeBron will try harder. The Cavs will hit more shots, even though they hit a ton tonight. They'll hit even more. They'll play with more energy and focus. They'll put the boots down, and then
they hit a ton of shots, but like they were mostly in the first half.
And also,
like, I think they hit 2 threes in the second half.
There is that part of me that wonders, was LeBron like, I really want to end it in Boston? I just really, really want to hear them chant, let's go Celtics, with 700 people left in the stands while I'm beating them by 30. Like,
I have a bigger conspiracy theory than that.
Shoot.
You know how he just spent so much time talking about how he hates all this time off and how he feels better when he's in rhythm? He doesn't like all this extra rest. He didn't think he was feeling that great in Game 1. He just... You know, he just wants to, like, play basketball every couple of days. He doesn't want to just go and work like crazy in the gym and have his body feel weird and out of rhythm. He doesn't want, like, 10 days off before the finals. So this is my conspiracy. They'll throw him a game. Maybe throw him another game. Who knows? But, like, let's just cut down on that extra time off that he doesn't want. Maybe. He wants enough to feel fresh, but not to feel rusty and weird.
Maybe he's also tired of having to answer that question. It was just like, if we just go like another game, they won't ask me that question about the time off.
They were asking him that question during the break. They were asking him that question in Boston, like right before Game 1. They asked him it after Game 1 that night. They asked the next day at practice. Like, I heard him comment on that so many times, and people looked, like, shocked that he was saying that. It's like, no, this has been what he said the entire time. He doesn't like it.
And now, if they end it in 5, he only gets a week off, so I'm sure he won't get that question at all.
It's got to go six. He's got to drop one more. The double gentlemen's like the Raptors last year.
There was that. Okay. So I was like conflicted because I was like, this is really great. There's a fascinating game and it's interesting. And then we have something to talk about that's actually relevant. And I was really excited. And I liked the way that the Celtics played tonight. I really liked the way that they played tonight. And then
I liked the way the Raptors played in those games 3 and 4 last year. I really did. They played awesome. But also, this feels a lot like that.
And then I was torn. Because then I was like, oh no, I have to work another night this week. Oh no. Because, like, my wife is waiting for there to be nothing, no games on. So we can hang and get stuff done around the house, and we gotta get ready to move. It's just like, it's a whole thing. So, like, my wife, who leans very, she's very pro LeBron, is very annoyed at this time, at this particular time. She's just like, why? Why must this happen? NBA
I mean, in fairness, it does seem a little unnecessary that they would lose this game. Like, they were up by 21 points. Like, it really looked like this was going the same way all the others were going. I understand the frustration when you're looking forward to some time off. I wouldn't mind the extra night off, too, but whatever.
Streaky Shooter on Twitter, who had the pop gif that everyone freaked out about earlier these playoffs. He tweeted this tonight, and I thought it was perfect. He said, honestly, both the Warriors and the Cavs are so petty that the Golden State might come out next game and put out even less effort than the Cavs did tonight. Like, they're always trying to one-up each other. It's like LeBron was like, wait, they, like, didn't, like, the Spurs went up by 20, and then they, like, hung with them in game 3? Like, no, we gotta show them that we, too, can struggle versus teams that are inferior to us.
Oh my God.
Good. I'm glad. See, we were able to have a passionate conversation about basketball, and it matters, and it was interesting. Our conclusion is not nothing matters. That's really nice. It's refreshing for an evening. I liked it.
I have a disagreement.
Shoot.
Nothing matters, Matt.